Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It's Wednesday, October 3rd, 2018. First Wednesday in October, 15 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned into the Now program. Want to do a little bit of housekeeping here before we get to our guest, who we always enjoy having on this station. Coming up tomorrow at 1:10, we have had the Republican candidate for governor, Mike DeWine, on. We have had the Democratic candidate for governor, Rich Cordray, on. And tomorrow, we will have the Libertarian candidate for governor, Travis Irvine, on. So, as I always say, the road to the Ohio Governor's Mansion comes right through WWGH Radio. So tomorrow at 1:10, Travis Irvine. Also, don't forget tonight, I will be on the Barry Farber Show, the National Barry Farber Show. Check your listings. I believe you can stream it on the internet. Barry Farber, the man who created Conservative Talk. This will be my third appearance on his show, which I always appreciate. But I'll be on the Barry Farber Show tonight. Always an interesting experience. I want to thank the amazing Kreskin for being on in hour one. And you heard it here first, folks. The amazing Kreskin, the man who's predicted presidential elections, predicted that Judge Kavanaugh will be confirmed. Now, this hour, we're going to chat with a man who you hear each and every Monday morning here on this station on Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam Lepp from 10:10 until 11 a.m. Monday mornings. Always a great program. He's a political scientist, an author, a professor, and always fun to have on, especially in times like these, Dr. Ronald Fineman. Dr. Fineman, how's it going?
I'm doing very well, Scott. Thank you very much for inviting me again.
It's always good to have you on, and here we are with Judge Kavanaugh. I want to start there. What do you make of Jeff Flake, Senator Flake, Republican, last week changing his vote in the 11th hour to vote for an investigation?
I think it was courageous and gutsy. Of course, it was easy for him to do it because he's not running for re-election, and that's the one big issue. But I have to disagree with your previous guest. My gut feeling is that Judge Kavanaugh will not be confirmed for the Supreme Court.
Now, what leads you to that prediction?
Well, I think actually Donald Trump, by what he did last night, hurts by going after Dr. Ford. And it's already alienated, I understand, Susan Collins and also Jeff Flake. And although we haven't heard that that's the case with Lisa Murkowski, I'm sure she does also. And it also, I think, affects two Democrats, red state Democrats, who believe, I think, in fair play and are tormented by this, and those are Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota. And if we can get two of those three Republicans to vote no, then that's all that's needed. But I really do think that all three will vote no, and I also think Heitkamp and Manchin will vote no. And therefore, it would be not just, you know, a small defeat. It will be a defeat by, with all the Democrats united and three Republicans.
Now, what would happen, because we think of this as a political issue, it's turned into a political issue, but what would happen if, let's say, all three of the Republicans voted no that you just mentioned, and the two Democrats voted yes, and that's what put him over?
Well, it would. That's true. It would. Well, it's an issue, and I know it's difficult for any senator. The Heitkamp and Manchin want to keep their seats, but they are affecting the future of the court, and I think that should be, but it may not be, more important than their own future. But again, maybe I'm expecting too much from politicians. But I just think that I still think, even though some polls show that in North Dakota and West Virginia they favor, Kavanaugh, I still feel that that the right thing to do, and I would think the moral thing to do, would be to reject them. They could always get another appointment. There's other people that could be considered for the court. Amy Coney Barrett, the woman that was mentioned earlier, and it would be a woman, a conservative woman on the court. I just think that this is not a good move for the reputation of the Supreme Court to have a person with this much controversy on the court.
But isn't the problem here, because this is what I think the problem is, if Kavanaugh is voted down, that really is the Republicans' last shot, because even though Donald Trump would get to appoint the next person, he would either have to do that this Friday or possibly next week. That's going to put us within 30 days of the election. They'd have to be vetted by the FBI. There would have to be Senate confirmation hearings. They would not be ready to vote by the election of 2018, which... there's a lot of money. Bloomberg now is dropping millions of dollars to try to change the Senate Democrat. And if it did go Democrat on Election Day and there's a Supreme Court justice looming, most people say that Flake, who would be a lame duck, and Collins would not vote for it just because of the fact that it would be a lame duck session. Then you go to a Democratic Senate who you can guarantee, if they believe this is a pro a life judge, they're not going to confirm it, and then you just don't have a judge for 2 years.
Well, the rumor I've read is that there might be a chance that if he is turned down, Kavanaugh, that there will be no appointment by Trump, and that there'll be an 8-member court for 2 more years, which I think is wrong. But look, we lived with it for about 15 months, so we can live with it again if need be, and would become an issue for 2020. But I do think, and I just wrote today on the ProgressiveProfessor.com, my blog, a way to promote anti-political polarization is nominate Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court. And after he should have been given a hearing almost 3 years ago, and not quite, it will be 3 years ago, early next year. And he is the chief judge of the U.S. Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C., and he is technically the boss of Kavanaugh, who's on the same court, and was the so-called, quote, boss of Neil Gorsuch, and they both admire him. They certainly have nothing bad to say about him. And he's a moderate, and he's in his mid-60s, so he would not have 30 years on the court. He would have maybe 10 to 15, but he would keep a balance on the court and leave the issue of what happens in the future to the next appointment. And I think it makes a lot of sense, and it would be a real dignified thing if Trump would actually agree, but I don't think he would. But I just think Merrick Garland should be given a chance to be considered.
Well, but isn't still the problem, because Trump did not turn down Merrick Garland. Mitch McConnell did, and as far as I know, he's still in power.
Yes, and he shouldn't be, honestly. I think he's a disgrace, as far as being the leader of the Republicans. I think the Republicans are likely to lose the Senate, and I think that they're going to lose the House also now, and also the governorships. A lot of the governorships are going to change, I think, to the Democrats, and that's going to affect reapportionment after the census of 2020, because the governors in states have a lot of impact on that. And I do think that this is a moment when the Republican Party has to reassess what its future is, and alienating women and minorities and young people and suburbia is not the way for the future of the Republican Party. And I'm sure many Republicans of the past, alive and dead, would be shocked at what has happened to the party they love.
This is what I believe is going on. This is what I believe you call a conundrum, because here's what I think is going to happen. I think the Republicans because of what you just said, and I agree with it, that if this guy doesn't get put through, no conservative judge might be put through. We don't know that the Senate's going to flip, but it's looking that way. So they know that if they don't put Kavanaugh in, they're not getting a conservative judge, and that court will end up being liberal. And that might be what, if it was anybody else in any other time frame, they might not vote for him, but that might push them to vote for him. And then the other issue is that if he doesn't get voted in and there is nobody nominated, I think that could hurt the Democrats' chances in the fall, because you're going to have a lot of angry Republicans who say the Democrats held this letter, Feinstein's evil, somebody leaked it just at the right time, blah, 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 blah.
Yes, I understand, but there's lots of angry Democrats who are furious that Obama did not get a chance to have Garland considered when Charles, Herbert Hoover nominated a Justice Benjamin Cardozo in the year of the election, which he ended up losing in 1932. John Adams, after losing to Thomas Jefferson, picked John Marshall as Chief Justice, and there's so many other cases of it in the election year of a president winning or losing or finishing up that they get a chance. So I think there's more angry women and more angry people who just feel Trump has been off the rails and has now gone even further by attacking Dr. Ford. So there's going to be a lot of angry people voting. It's just a question of which group has more angry people voting. But it's very polarizing, and I think Merrick Garland is not a liberal. He's a moderate. He's a centrist, and that would be a perfect balance. He'd be the swing vote like Anthony Kennedy was for the last 10 years, and Sandra Day O'Connor was with Kennedy before that. And I think the best future for the court for now is have a balance on the court, and Garland is not a liberal, and I think he would be an excellent choice, and again, would not be there forever because he is 65 already, so it would not be a 30-year appointment, and I think it's the right thing, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen, but that's why I really am promoting that idea right now.
You know, I know this is not a popular thing to say, but we try to stay balanced on this show and have conservative and liberal viewpoints, and isn't this, though, the whole situation we're in with Rosenstein and President Trump and the Supreme Court, if people don't like it, doesn't a lot of this blame lie with President Obama? Because as I've said before, it was President Obama's FBI director, Jim Comey. Trump didn't hire him or appoint him. President Obama did. And he is the one who opened up the case and broke protocol against Hillary Clinton in the final moments of the election, which a lot of people swung it toward Donald Trump. It's also President Obama's CIA. If there was election tampering that went on, it went on under President Obama's watch. Donald Trump was just a private citizen, and so was Hillary Clinton at that time. And if you look at the Supreme Court, yes, he did nominate Merrick Garland, and yes, Mitch McConnell put the brakes on it, but there is no law that said that President Obama could not have sworn him in and dared the Senate to take him out, which they probably would not have done.
A recess appointment, yes. No, actually, what you say about Obama is absolutely true in each case. I mean, I think he really did flub things in his last year, and I'm not sure why, but the recess appointment should have been done. That happened to William Brennan in 1956, an election year. Eisenhower picked William Brennan as a recess appointment, and then he was confirmed later. He could have been rejected later, and he ended up on the court for 34 years as a flaming liberal, which Eisenhower thought he was going to be a conservative, one of the many cases of justices surprising us.
Well, isn't also one of the problems, and it's my understanding, we certainly all knew about Hillary's emails, we certainly all knew about Benghazi, but weren't the only people in the United States who knew about the Russian meddling Mitch McConnell and President Obama?
From what I gather, more than Mitch McConnell and President Obama, I think Paul Ryan and Kevin McCarthy were talking about it that summer, and you know, McCarthy made a comment, and Ryan said, "Shh, be quiet," at a meeting of House Republicans. I think a lot of Republicans knew about it,
but
they figured that if it could help us to win, and they changed the actual platform, to be more pro-Russian than it was supposed to be, and the Republican convention. I think the Republican Party is complicit in a lot of this, and I think it's going to come out in the Mueller report that it's not just Trump and his people, it's really the party that has done a lot of a lot of dirty deeds and damage to the country.
But let's go back here, because you're the political historian, you would know better than I. How did Mitch McConnell stop President Obama from telling people that?
Good question. You got me a little speechless for a minute.
Because Obama knew. Obama
I don't
knew.
Know. I really don't know. I think we'll find out one day. I don't think we really do know.
I think
you have to realize Mitch McConnell is a power figure in Washington, and don't forget his wife now is, of course, in the Trump cabinet and had been in the Bush cabinet, second Bush cabinet. So he has a lot of ability to control what goes on, and really ignored Obama a lot, just like Ryan did. They didn't work with him very well at all. And I guess you could blame both sides, but I think it's both Obama's fault and McConnell and Ryan's fault as well.
But
no cooperation. Unlike Ronald Reagan with Tip O'Neill, the Speaker of the House, and unlike Lyndon Johnson with Senator Everett Dirksen, the Senate Minority Leader in the 1960s, where they crossed the aisle and they worked together while indeed fighting each other publicly, they worked privately. But not this time, no, unfortunately. Total polarization.
Well, I understand polarization, but it's my understanding that the first person who knew, now the Republicans may have got wind of it, but the first concrete evidence was presented to the president. And
yes.
he took it to Mitch McConnell. Why? That's what I don't understand. He took it to Mitch McConnell, and Mitch McConnell said, "Don't do it. You're putting your hand on the election." And Obama said, "Okay, I'm not going to do it."
Now, well, he gave in, and he shouldn't have, but it would have made him look more political that he's trying to influence the election and that president leaving doesn't want to do that directly, even though we knew he was for Hillary Clinton. It's a very touchy, awkward kind of situation.
But isn't it interesting, though, now that we come to today's times, instead of rehashing the 2016 election, that Mitch McConnell was able to put the brakes on President Obama, and Mitch McConnell was not able to put the brakes on John McCain, on Obamacare, or Jeff Flake, both Republicans,
in these crucial votes. Yeah.
But Obama acquiesced, but Flake and McCain did not.
Well, again, I think, you know, in the writing of the biography of Obama, he has a lot of positives, but he has negatives, and I think the whole picture years later will not be as positive as one might have thought. There's definitely, like with any president or any leader, there's going to be pluses and minuses, and this is an example of something that was regrettable, yes.
Well, it's just interesting, because I think what some people forget is Hillary Clinton was involved in politics, yes, but at the time of the election, she was not. She was not holding any office, and neither was Donald Trump. And that's pretty rare when you have two candidates that are not in any office. So neither one of them were being briefed heavily on anything. And it's fascinating to me that Obama, who's running the country at the time, it's his CIA, it's his FBI director, it's his decision, and really, the Benghazi thing, that was his. The email thing, that's his administration. He almost acted as if he didn't have anything to do with any of that. That there was just, he didn't want any hands in that.
Well, you know, I don't know how to explain it. I think that's something we'll find out in the future. I think a lot of this is secret stuff. I don't know why he didn't. He was a little too much laissez-faire, hands-off. It's true. And yet others would say he was trying to do too much with all his executive orders. So somehow, no matter whether you do too much on something or too little, you get criticized at the end.
Well, it is interesting, but I would say that... I don't know if he had loyalty to Hillary Clinton, to be honest with you. I certainly think he didn't want Donald Trump, but there were just a lot of cases where he could have said, well, I made the decision on Benghazi. Nobody can tell me that Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, doesn't make the final decision. I'm sure somebody briefed the president. The email thing. Obama never got an email from Hillary Clinton. His office never got an email from her. He could have put that whole thing to bed. Loretta Lynch, that was his attorney general who met with Bill Clinton.
Yes.
His FBI director who pulled her up a week before the election, 12 days. I don't understand any of that. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't really know either. I will say that I think Obama, while working with Hillary Clinton, you know, when she was Secretary of State, probably there's always been some tension between them, even so. And I think Obama wanted Joe Biden to be running, and I think Joe Biden would have been running if it hadn't been for his son, Beau, dying. And I do think it would have been a very different history, as I've told you before, if Joe Biden had somehow been able to defeat Hillary, which I think he would have, and would have, I think, won over President Trump.
You know, I don't know. See, I still wonder that question because I think now we look at it and we say, well, yeah, Donald Trump was defeatable. But at that time, not only did Trump beat Hillary Clinton, but he beat the Bush family, he beat Ted Cruz, he beat Rubio, he beat Chris Christie, and 15 other Republicans. I don't know that Donald Trump was beatable. I don't know that anybody who was touting the Obama administration would have been able to win, and certainly not his vice president.
Well, if that's the case, then it means this idea that Joe Biden's leading in polls and that he's the one person who could defeat Trump may not be true. And I think that would make people wonder whether we need someone fresh and new.
Well, I think it's different now, though, because Trump's got a record. See, at the time, you couldn't point to anything because he'd never worked in politics. So, you know, and we also didn't know anything about Russia at the time. I think that's where I think Hillary could beat him now.
Well, I don't know. I think people, I don't think too many, I guess there's those who love Hillary, but I think that would probably cause a major disgust among many Americans saying, again? Because I really don't think that there's the feeling that they want her to run again. I don't see enough support for her to be the nominee. I think it would really divide the Democratic Party if she were to announce.
Well, I keep hearing all these young names like Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, and yes, they are doing things, but the people I keep hearing the most of on the Democratic side are Joe Biden. Bernie Sanders is still asking for $27. He's got a super PAC out there.
Yes.
And Elizabeth Warren, who's now. Why do you have to be over 70 to be president?
Well, actually, I would argue that you should not have to be, and I think we need someone ideally younger in their 40s or 50s, and I have some people like Chris Murphy, I think, is someone to watch, the senator from Connecticut, Eric Garcetti, the mayor of L.A., they're both in their 40s, or also Amy Klobuchar, who I think handled herself very well at the hearing last week. She's from Minnesota, and she's from the Midwest, and the Midwest is crucial for the election, and I think having a Midwesterner running for president, who also happens to be a woman, would probably be a good mix. I really do think so, but it's hard to know. You know, at this point, there's like 54 people, jokingly, who might announce they're running, and we're not going to have 54, but probably 15 to 20, and there's no way to know, but right after November 6th, we're going to have everybody starting to announce and going to New Hampshire and Iowa, and we're going to be on the run toward 2020.
Eric Holder, last night I saw on CNN, he looks like he's pretty well going to run.
He's also in his 70s, though.
That'll
so
put him
in the older years.
It'll put him in good company, because that's where we are.
And I must say that I wrote an article on History News Network about four people in their 80s, or would be in their 80s during the next term, in the 70s now, but late 70s, that would be potential candidates. Never had a situation like that, and that includes John Kerry, who's talking about running also, and Bernie Sanders, and Joe Biden, and also Michael Bloomberg, all would be in their 80s during the term if they were to win. This is unprecedented. I don't know. I think Joe Biden is the best bet of that group, but it's really impossible now to figure it out.
Here's what I don't understand, and I've said this to you before, and I really don't understand it to this day. Hillary Clinton has only been the nominee of a party one time and lost, the main nominee. Joe Biden has run in primaries and lost.
Twice, yes.
Yeah, Kerry had the nomination and lost.
Once, yes.
Right? And Bernie Sanders was in the primary, lost. Why is it okay for these people to go, oh, not again to them, but Hillary Clinton, oh, Jesus, not again with her?
Maybe because she's better known than any of them, and she's more controversial because of her husband. I think 20 years ago, the Bill Clinton scandals still are part of the equation to many people.
But don't we like scandals now? Don't we like that in this White House? We love a good scandalous person.
Well, I am amazed by the people who are so upset still about Bill Clinton's scandals, but they seem to be willing to overlook the Donald Trump sex scandals and all the people around him. It is amazing. It's what we call hypocrisy.
All I know is what I find very odd is that Hillary Clinton has a super PAC. She's donating to candidates out there, and she was on Murphy Brown last week. What's the deal? You know, why is she doing all this if she's just going to stay at home for the rest of her life, or just be a party spokesperson? It doesn't make any sense to me.
So you really think she's going to announce next year?
I think she's waiting for the Russia investigation to come back, and if they put the needles to her, then she's ready to run, because she's already got a super PAC. And I do think it's harder to walk away if you lose, and it was, I mean, look what it did to Al Gore. We don't even know what happened to him. He was so upset by that. And Hillary Clinton, it just, to me, she's a tough lady, and I think if she finds out that the Russians had a hand in this big time, that it's going to be hard for her to just lump that in her throat for the rest of her life and walk away.
Well, it could be. I just somehow do not see her being the nominee. I think she would cause more division and probably be helping the Republicans. I just don't see her unifying the party. Of course, she can run, but I really do not believe she would be the nominee at the end, because I think there's too many people who would say we need a fresh start, or we want someone else, not someone who was twice, running so seriously. Although I know, of course, others like Joe Biden, but he wasn't serious either time. In her case, she was very serious, both in 8 and 16. So, and I guess being a woman, not for me personally, but I guess to a lot of people, they would say, oh my God, that woman again, it's a different standard than for a man. It really is. You can have a Newt Gingrich, or you can have a Donald Trump, or you can have a Chris Christie, who is a loudmouth, as you'd say, but if someone is female and they speak loudly and they speak affirmatively, like Elizabeth Warren, I think would have trouble because of that. That's a different thing to many people. They don't want a woman who's outspoken. They want a man who's outspoken. It's terrible, but I think that's the way many people see it, including women.
What is our governor's game here? He's just about out of office. What's he doing?
I think he's definitely running. I think it's clear from all the interviews he's going to announce for president. I don't know what's going to happen, but I think he would be probably, at this point, one of the two best people the Republicans could nominate, the other being John Huntsman, the ambassador to Russia, who ran in 2012, didn't do too well. But I think Huntsman is really qualified, and I think a Kasich-Huntsman or Huntsman-Kasich ticket would be a really good ticket for the Republican Party and would help to unite the party and change its direction. But I don't know if it's going to be possible because of our president, and if he's not running, Mike Pence. So it's going to be interesting, but I do think Kasich and Huntsman are people to watch.
But do people with Kasich go, oh, him again?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Do they turn and go, oh, him again? Here's Kasich.
No, because he was not that serious in either 2000, very lacking in being serious in 2000, dropped out early. And then, of course, in 2016, he only won his home state. I think it's a little different because even though he's well-known, he's not as well-known and as controversial as Hillary Clinton is, unfortunately. It's just the reality. Hillary is in a special category because of her husband as well.
But isn't there a problem, though? Because as soon as Kasich leaves the governorship, if he would have to start running, and if he does, doesn't that pose a problem? Because then doesn't President Trump just start beating away at him?
Well, of course, that's going to happen anyway. You could attack everybody. He always has. But I think Kasich can handle it. And I think Kasich ideally should have been the nominee in 2016, and I think he would have beaten Hillary Clinton and in the real world, including the popular vote, if he had been the Republican nominee.
Well, it's interesting because I don't know, because living in the state that he is governor of for the last two terms, neither one of the gubernatorial candidates wants to deal with him right now, and the Republicans in this state don't want anything to do with him.
Well, he's a lame duck because he's leaving, that's why.
But they don't want his endorsement, they don't want to talk to him. They want nothing to do with him.
Because they want to make friends with the president, that's why. It's a Jim Jordan Ohio party, I think. And he could be the next Speaker of the House if the Republicans win the majority. He's one of the major possibilities to be Speaker of the House.
But if he's no longer popular in Ohio, doesn't that present a problem for him running for president?
Well, have there been polls that say he's not popular, or just that the Republican politicians don't want to mention him?
Well, I would think that Mike DeWine, for example, running for governor, I would think that he's done some kind of poll, and if he believed Kasich would help him, I'm sure he'd ask for his help.
That surprises me, because I always thought he was rated pretty highly in whatever polls I had seen, but it's a while back. Every politician has ups and downs. After all, when you talk about the most famous women in the world, Hillary's always at the top of the list. Depends on which poll and which group of people you're asking. So obviously she would have a lot of support, so would Kasich, but it doesn't mean it's going to be enough support all around the nation to be able to win enough primaries and caucuses. It's very hard. If anybody could now project who's going to win, I'd say it's a gamble, because 2 years ahead, we never have picked yet the person who seems to be a front runner. So it means there's really no way to know. It's probably someone we're not even talking about who will be the nominee, at least in the Democratic Party. Republican Party, who knows? We'll have to see what happens with Trump.
And we got to keep our eye on Mitt Romney.
Yes, I think Mitt Romney definitely would be interested in coming back. I think he's hinting at it. I do think he would, yeah, and I think he would be a tough competitor, certainly.
Well, he's coming back to the Senate. I think he's a pretty well shoe-in up there in
Utah.
Utah, yeah.
Yes.
He's coming back, so there you go. And Huntsman is still working for the president in Moscow, so I don't know that he would ever run.
I think he's going to leave soon. I don't think he's very happy. I've gathered through people who apparently know him, I don't know how much to believe this, that he's not comfortable, that he probably will leave after the election. fact, some people even think that he's the anonymous person who wrote that letter, you know, for the New York Times. I don't know if that's true, but some people are speculating that Huntsman is the one who wrote it. And actually, it makes a lot of sense when you think about it. He doesn't like the kind of stuff that's going on. He's a very reasonable guy and a very accomplished person, certainly in foreign affairs. And I can't believe that Huntsman really likes what's going on.
You know, I remember in the days when the New York Times used to report on something other than Donald Trump. it seems to me like they just have a staff now that does nothing but investigates Donald Trump 24 hours a day.
And the Washington Post as well, yes.
But I don't understand that. I mean, my goodness gracious.
Well, he's a dominating figure, and he loves the attention, even if it's negative. He loves to be noticed, that's for sure.
Yeah, but that story yesterday was like 27 pages long if you printed it off. I mean,
yes.
My goodness gracious, how long, they've been, what, 2.5 years he said he'd been working on that, or a year and a half or something? I mean,
yeah, well, I mean, they're very good at investigating things, but it takes a lot of work and time, yes.
But
yet, I don't think there's anything there that's going to be shown to not be true. I think it's very clearly correct.
But,
it's just not something the president wants us to know.
Right.
A lot of this, I think, we sort of like knew without knowing.
But what does this story really prove? I was watching it yesterday. What, that he, people say, well, he's not self-made? I mean, what is the, that he did some things with the IRS? I didn't know you could pull things over the IRS's eyes like this, apparently. Apparently you can.
Well, I think wealthy people in general know how to play the game, and they know they have lawyers, and they have ways of saving. I don't think it's that unusual. It's just the amount that he saves, only paying 5% inheritance tax instead of 55%. That is stunning. That I am amazed. But obviously, the Trump family had connections with people in the IRS, I guess, who probably were and are corrupt. Unfortunately, it does add to the image that every government agency needs to be really investigated, but not necessarily the way that Trump sees it, but that there is a lot of corruption and scandal that goes on, unfortunately, behind the scenes.
You know, I was watching CNN yesterday when this story broke, and I'll tell you, there was, I don't know who the commentator was. She was one of these, you know, not well known. And she said on the network, on the CNN there yesterday, she said, the IRS doesn't really look into businesses' taxes and doesn't really audit people very much anymore because they don't care. And I'm thinking, this lady's going to get audited by the IRS tomorrow.
Well, I don't know if it's that they don't care. It's always the argument there isn't enough funding to do a lot of investigation of people. That's what I've always heard and read. Not that they don't care, but that there isn't enough funding. There's often been cuts to the IRS budget, which I think is purposeful by politicians so that they aren't investigated. So, but I don't know why he says they don't care. That I don't think is correct.
Well, even the funding thing, I bet they'll find the funding to audit her.
It might be so. It's sort of like funny the way you're bringing it up. I hadn't seen that, but yeah, I think sometimes some things are said on the air that are not quite accurate and often quite ridiculous, I think. That's why the best source is still not cable news. The best source is reading the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, LA Times, and other papers. I think they're much more accurate than what goes on over the cable news.
You know, I do believe that CNN is the most accurate of the three news channels we have, but I don't defend them in every case because I'm telling
no,
you.
No, I agree.
Sometimes I hear these little like teasers that they run, and you know, Donald Trump not self-made. And I think, well, now wait a second. That you shouldn't be doing that. That's not impartial. You have to just tell what the story says and then let it be. But they got to get rid of these pundits. It's just too much.
Well, they should, but actually people like to see these people arguing and debating back and forth. And, you know, I guess every one of us, like me even, if I had a chance to be on CNN as a pundit, I wouldn't turn it down.
Well, no, I think we would all go do it, but the problem
yeah.
is that I think people get confused between what is real. Do you remember when CNN started? There were no
yes,
pundits.
1980, yes.
Yeah, there were no pundits. It was
That's
just
true.
News. News. What happened? That's all. But I don't know if that would work today. I don't know. Do you have to have Chris Cuomo on there every night doing some kind of thing on a blackboard? And I don't know. It's all kind of strange.
Well, it's a different time, and whatever brings in the audience and makes money for the channel. Don't forget, it's all based on advertising, so and commercials. So You know, I guess some would call it yellow journalism, like the newspapers in the time of the Spanish-American War, where they helped to promote the idea of going to war against Spain. I think there is quite a bit of yellow journalism in cable, and particularly with Fox News Channel, but not alone with them, also with the other channels. But I think more so with Fox News Channel.
You know, Dr. Feinman, I know by listening to the show with you and Adam on Monday that you are not a fan of President Trump, but don't you at some point have to feel empathy for this guy? He must be close to a stroke. I mean, every newspaper is auditing him. Things are being turned over to the IRS, attorney general's offices, special counsel. I mean, I've never seen, there's like 20 investigations going on this guy.
Well, but I think they're justified. This is the most corrupt administration, it's clear to me, much more than Warren G. Harding or Ulysses S. Grant or Richard Nixon. And in fact, I'm having an article come out in the next week or two saying that Donald Trump is no Richard Nixon. You know, people try to compare him to Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon had real qualities that were positive, real accomplishments. Of course, he had his negative side, but to compare the two is unjust to Richard Nixon, because Richard Nixon's much more outstanding and had much more of a positive record, even mixed in with the negative. With Donald Trump, I feel that he gets what he deserves because he's a miserable human being who is really totally attacking everybody and everything, has no ethics, no morals, no scruples in any sense, and so I don't feel one bit of sympathy for him. I think he's getting what he deserves, honestly.
Now, don't hold back. Tell us how you really feel. Now, here's the thing. When you were originally on this program, you had said that President Trump would be out of office by last May. Now, you did amend that. Is there a new date that you're looking at?
I still think he'll be out of office in the next 6 months or so. I've been saying, and I may be wrong, because you never know, there's always prognostication, the next shortest presidency now is, get this, Warren G. Harding, next June 30th. On June 30th of next year, he will reach Trump, Warren G. Harding's time in office before his death. I think he will be gone before June 30th. So that means the next 6 to 8 months. And I think once the Mueller report comes out, I believe it will be very serious. And I believe the Democrats will be in control of the House, and I think there'll be moves to really investigate. And I think his family members will be involved in this, Trump's, and I do think that he will eventually resign.
Mueller seems to have gone quiet, which we all expected he would 60 days prior to the election.
Yes.
Now, the day after the election, does he just spill it? Do you see it coming before Thanksgiving?
I would say not the day after, but I would think by Thanksgiving, or maybe right after Thanksgiving, maybe give Trump time to enjoy Thanksgiving. And that, but I do think before the year ends, yes.
Now, do you think it's going to come in the form of bad things for him, or bad things for his family, or all of the above?
I think all of the above. I expect, I may be wrong, of course, you know, nobody really knows for sure. I tend to think Jared Kushner will be indicted, and I think Donald Trump Jr. will be indicted. And I think there'll be all kinds of indictments in New York State against the president, not so much Mueller. But don't forget, there are those other investigations going on, which cannot be covered by a pardon. So I do think that it's going to all, you know what is going to hit the fan late November, early December, and it's going to be just at the time when the new Congress has to, of course, organize itself.
Oh.
And I do think it will be a Democratic House, not certain on the Senate, but I think it will be a Democratic House, and there'll be a battle over who the Speaker of the House is. I don't think Nancy Pelosi's got it in the bag either.
During the holiday season, we're going to have to deal with this.
I think so, yes. And once the new year begins with people announcing for president, it's going to be politics more than ever, and people who hate politics are going to not want to watch news because it'll be all the time for the next 2 years until the election. I don't think we're going to be able to escape it. In fact, I don't think in the modern era we can ever escape it anyway.
Well, maybe they could wait till the first of the year.
Maybe, possibly. I don't think it's going to, I actually think we're going to have people announcing in December for president. I think we're going to, and I think it's going to be, if you're a political buff, you're going to love it. If you hate politics, you're going to want to just ignore it. But it's really important that people vote this November and that they continue to be involved and to know what's going on. It's never good to be ignorant.
Who's going to be the first person to announce on the Democratic side?
Oh, boy, that's an interesting one. It could be anybody, actually. It could be one of the lesser people, you know, that we wouldn't think of. I have a feeling Elizabeth Warren will announce before the year ends.
But people don't like her, I don't think.
Well, because she's loud and she's shrill, even though I don't have a problem with her. But I think, again, if she was a male, if she was Chris Christie or Newt Gingrich, which was very much the same, that's more acceptable to more people. Not to me, I don't like them, but I'm just saying, but I agree. I do not think she would be. If we're going to have a woman, my gut feeling is you have to have a woman who's not the same kind of personality she has. And I do think Kamala Harris is very similar to her, and even Kirsten Gillibrand. That's why I think Amy Klobuchar, and from the right part of the nation, the Midwest, Minnesota, I think, as far as being a female, is the most likely to appeal to both men and women. And she should be on the ticket, I would say, either as president or vice president, in my opinion, the candidate, because I think we need someone from the Midwest. It would help, because the Midwest is crucial to winning an election. And we see what happened this past time. You cannot ignore the Midwest.
I think it's going to be Bernie, because I think he's got this $27 thing, and I think he needs to raise money. And I think he'll be the first one. He's got nothing to lose. On the Republican side, who's going to, if this president's going to be primaried, who's going to be the one who's going to announce first?
Kasich.
All right. And when do you think that will happen?
I think in January, I would guess. I hadn't really thought that deeply, but I think it'll be a couple of months. I think you have to start early and either side, because of the caucuses and primaries, just a little more than a year away once the new year begins. And Bernie may announce first, but I don't see Bernie as the nominee at the end. I really don't. I just don't think he would be the nominee of the party. I really am. I think more chance Joe Biden would be, honestly, than Bernie.
I have to disagree with you on this one, because I think Bernie Sanders... right now, if the Democrats do take back everything in November, like this Beto guy down in
Beto O'Rourke in Texas.
If that guy can win in Texas,
wow.
Then Bernie Sanders is the Democratic Party much more than Joe Biden.
Yes, but I don't know if he could win the country. I'm not sure the nation is as far left as Sanders. I'm a liberal in my own mind, a progressive, but I think you have to be a moderate liberal. And I think a Joe Biden, Hubert Humphreys, like a Hubert Humphrey, I think that's more likely to win the country. And I think Amy Klobuchar fits into that moderate liberal. I think the other women are too liberal for the country, including Warren. And I do think Bernie, as far as winning the election, he could be the nominee, but I've argued with people I know who think Bernie's the greatest thing since sliced bread, but I do not think he can unite the country. He could unite the party, maybe, and then they'll lose. And this is not a time to lose. We need to win if you're a Democrat.
Well, I don't know, because, see, what confuses me is my take now from talking to people is that anybody could have won the last election but Hillary Clinton. But yet, you had, it's not like you didn't have your chance. People could have picked Joe Biden. I'm sure if there had been a movement, he would have got in there. People could have jumped on... remember when Hillary fainted at the... what was it? The 9/11 thing. She fainted. There was talk, my understanding, that they were going to try to get Joe Biden in there at that point, but they didn't.
No, well, Martin O'Malley was running, but he had no chance in the competition of Sanders and Hillary and Biden in the background. Martin O'Malley is a former governor of Maryland, I think, who might run again. I don't think he's going to be the nominee, but he could be the running mate. I think he's someone who just real chance, and I think he should have been looked at more, but it was dominated by Sanders and Clinton and Biden in the background, and that's why he got nowhere. But I don't think he can be dismissed even now.
What about this Avenatti?
Oh, gosh, no. No, I think Avenatti is a publicity seeker, and I really am turned off to him. And I, you know, he's dynamic in a certain way, but I think we need someone who's been in government, and he has not. He's been a lawyer, but he's not been in government. I don't want another non-government person. I don't want a celebrity or a business person. I don't want a Mark Zuckerberg, for instance, who could run. That, I think, would be the worst thing possible. We need someone who's proved himself in government, even if it's only a few years, like Mitt Romney only was governor of one term, 4 years. But the point is, he was in government. I really think we need a person in government, so I would not like Avenatti. I don't see him going all the way. I think he's extremely divisive, and I actually find him annoying.
But what
personally.
About,
I just don't like him.
What Bloomberg dumping $20 million into the Senate? What about Bloomberg?
Well, Bloomberg has been the mayor, of course, of New York City, so he has the background. But
so he'll be representing the president soon, like Giuliani. That's what mayors of New York seem to do.
Well, I think Bloomberg, however, is controversial for some of the stance he's taken on certain issues. Some I like and some I don't like. With the soda issue, I think is a little crazy.
Oh, my goodness.
I do think he's also so wealthy that I think it would turn people off, because he's certainly wealthier than Donald Trump, that we know.
Well, let me tell you, I love New York City. I love Manhattan.
And I'm from New York originally, yes.
Oh, there we go. But I'm telling you, the mayors of New York City are all a little nutty.
Not Fiorello LaGuardia back in the 1930s and 40s, I don't think, although maybe people thought he was.
But
John Lindsay, I don't think, was crazy, but, you know, he had other issues that people didn't like him. But, yeah, I would tend to understand what you're saying.
I mean,
they tend to be way out there, yes. But I think Giuliani actually was a fairly good mayor at the time, but he has really gone off the deep end. He's really, I think he's starting to show signs of mental derangement, really. I can't believe the way he behaves in public. It's a disgrace, I think.
When I first started in radio, one of the guys I used to have on a lot was Ed Koch.
I was still living in New York then. I did not particularly care for him. He was much too in your face. He was a little like a Donald Trump in a way while in office. He was a person who said whatever he wanted to say, and people thought it was entertaining, but I think there's such a thing as diplomacy and tact, D-A-C-T, and he did not have any of it. And he also had scandals in his administration.
Well, he and Donald Trump didn't like each other. They had a bad relationship.
Two supreme narcissists. That's why. You know, that's exactly it, yes.
I'll have to dig out an old Ed Koch interview sometime, and we'll play it on this station. Boy, he was something else.
Yeah, and Bill de Blasio is a character. The present mayor, you know, he won his second term, but he's also quite a character. Now, these people, I don't think a New Yorker at this point, although Hillary was from New York, I don't think a New Yorker, including Kirsten Gillibrand, I just don't see New Yorkers winning the nomination or the election.
Well,
I think the New York time has passed.
As soon as we find out about this Bloomberg and his wanting to limit people's sodas, people are not going to go for that. I'm telling you, that isn't going to work.
No, it's not going to work, and that's why I think of those people that would reach 80, I do not see Sanders winning the election. I do not see Kerry really being serious, although he sounds better now than he used to. He seems somehow more interesting than he did 15 years ago. I still think Joe Biden is the most likely of the four that would reach 80, but do we really want someone in their 80s during the term is the issue, and I doubt it.
I'm going to have to know how he feels about sodas. Here's the thing. This is Dr. Ron Fineman. He's on every Monday morning with Adam Lepp, mid-morning coffee break. Do yourself a favor. Check it out. It's always interesting. Dr. Fineman, it's always a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you so much. I had a grand time.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Dr. Fineman, and that's it for us today. Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
So you can count them up.
Do you think that it's good that Bob Dole is the only Republican